Welcome back. I'd like to call this meeting of the Energy Policy Committee to order. Our first order of business today is we're going to be talking about heating assistance and weatherization. It's, of course, always an issue for Minnesotans in the winter, and I think this year, as we acted on the floor to deal with the short-term crisis of making sure that Minnesotans have heat in their homes, but there's really some longer-term issues that we need to take a look at. And the two that we're going to address today are, do we have enough resources set aside for heating assistance in Minnesota generally on an ongoing basis? And do we have enough resources set aside for weatherization on an ongoing basis? It seems to me that we should be looking at whether more investment in weatherization could decrease the need for spending on energy assistance. We looked at this last year for about 22 minutes after we had a hearing on Buy the Farm, and we didn't have much in the way of legislation proposed, but I think given the propane crisis and given the fact that this issue has been elevated, we'll be using a lot of our committee time this year to take a look at the longer-term issues. Commissioner Rothman's here, and he's going to give us an update on more specifics than when we were able to get into on the floor about exactly how this money will be spent. Thank you for being here, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, members, Madam Chair, and thank you for your vote just now on the floor. It's obviously an urgent matter, and I'm happy to be here today to talk a little bit more in depth to the committee about the energy assistance program, and then as well questions on broad overview of our weatherization program to give you some background on that. So it's kind of hard to find a specific place to start, but the low-income heating assistance program has been in effect for many, many years. It's a federal program. Every year we get an allocation from the federal government. It's a federally funded program. Typically some states do supplement it. For example, Wisconsin does supplement their heating assistance program, and what I thought I would do is walk the committee through some of the background on the propane shortage and the action steps that we took, perhaps a little overview on the supply, some of those issues, maybe address some of those things as they come up, and what action steps the department has taken and the governor in respect to the energy crisis. So first of all, I want to say that we've taken an all-hands-on-deck approach. There's nothing that, to the extent that we can, we've gone after trying to resolve all the issues. The governor, as you know, issued a state of peacetime emergency. He issued the executive orders to allow trucks to go get propane in other states, and then worked very hard to increase the supply to Minnesota of propane by ironing out issues with the pipeline with the trucks, to the extent we've had conversations with the railroad industry as well to try and to improve the supply of propane coming into Minnesota. At one time, I'd say about a month back, 3 weeks back, that propane was still on allocation, but after taking some initiatives to get, for example, Enterprise Pipeline to ship more shipments up into Minnesota. In particular, after the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issued an emergency authority to require them to prioritize the pipeline supplies to Minnesota, to Conway and the pipeline system, we were able to get a better supply. However, even as of last week, it's still reported by industry that the supply remains 60% of the five-year average. So we're not out of the woods yet in terms of the propane supply. I say that it's been reported to me as touch and go. I reported as touch and go through March, and therefore on the supply side, we've seen improvement, but it's still not as good as it could be. And then we have distribution chinks that are working themselves out in terms of pricing and getting the deliveries in the quantities that people need. That goes to whether they can get a 1 week, 2 week fill or whatever, how full they can get their tanks at this time. Let's turn to the price. The typical price of propane, for example, if you go back to October before the crisis hit, is about $1.70 per gallon for propane. At one point, when prices spiked, it went all the way up to $6.67 per gallon. In a couple of areas that were reported, they were in the $5 range and high $4 range for quite a while. And since then, they have, since mid-January on, for the last few weeks, they've come down as we saw the supply improve. I also issued or sent a letter to the Propane Association to be distributed to their members, asking them to be careful about these prices. That you know, from the LIHEAP program's perspective and consumer protection laws perspective, we were going to keep a very close eye on the price spikes. And so then I think, as the weeks came along, the prices have come down 25 cents, 50 cents here and there over the weeks. The current price is approximately at the high of $3.89 a tank, an average of $3.26. So still double what the typical price has been, and so you can see there has been moderate improvement, but it's still a touch and go situation to make sure that we're getting the supply at a and get those prices down for people so that they can afford them. And of course, you know, people on low income heating assistance can barely afford a tank in the first place, and so when these prices have hit, they've severely impacted them. So what's happened was is because of the propane shortage and the prices, people's tanks sort of dropped and kept dropping and dropping. The system was on allocation from the private sector, and people's tanks dropped to even below 10% and even, you know, totally flat out to zero. So in response to that, the department and the governor issued several crisis actions. One was to increase the crisis payment from $500 to $1,000. That's an additional allocation you can get in the LIHEAP program on top of your standard payment. And the second thing we did was we increased the amount of the percentage of the tank that you'd have to drop to. So typically you would have to drop to 20% of your tank. And we found that people were in such a fearful situation over long weekends that 20% was just too low, or even not being able to get a delivery, or being told by their propane companies that they weren't going to be able to get a tank full for quite a while. So what we did is we increased that tank percentage to 30%, so that it would incentivize those tanks to be filled, and people could get their tanks filled and then have enough to last a little bit longer. The third thing we did was increase the eligibility requirement from 50% of the state median income to the 60% of state median income, and and that was in response to many people who were just above the eligibility requirement who still couldn't afford it and were having a very difficult time paying for their heat, to allow more people to be eligible for the program. That is estimated to include about 120,000 more eligible people for the program, and then that's about, we're expecting about 30,000 to 40,000 people to actually take that to actually apply and receive those dollars. So typically, or in Minnesota at the current time, we have about 108 or more thousand Minnesota households who've been approved and are receiving energy assistance. We have currently approximately 23,000 or so Minnesota households that have submitted applications or are in the process of having them determined as eligible. And so based on the program changes in the crisis and our historical data, we determine that need and the gap. Typically, the program is run so that it pays out through May 31st. To be able to accommodate the rest of the winter, and in fact, the example last winter, we got bad weather all the way through the end of May, and it was cold still. So, and then backing that up, another significant thing to keep in mind is that as the cold weather rule expires in April, we see a large increase in applications from people who are concerned about being able to pay for their heat. So we get a bit of a spike typically in the April time period. So because of that, we determined that we would need the $20 million in additional funding to be able to run the program. With the applications we have, we could run out as soon as March 1, and we were just, because of that, in a dire situation. I do want to, before I go too far, I want to extend appreciation and thank you to the local service providers. Those are the, as everyone knows, in everyone's communities, the organizations that actually are distributing the funds. The state acts as an administrator. We keep track of the funds. We work with the programs and all the program dynamics. And that all of the organizations and the impact felt by these organizations to help all the folks in your communities has been overwhelming at times, but distressful, but they have been working very diligently to get the dollars out to the people. I should also extend a appreciation to the Propane Association for collaborating with us when we had asked issues and tried to find what the solutions would be, and then as well to be able to triage the dire situation. So, for example, if somebody was not income eligible in the energy assistance program, meaning they could not get financial assistance, even if you're $100 above that and you were zeroed out on your propane tank, we set up through our hotline and our team coordination with Roger Leiter to work with local propane companies to make sure that their tanks were filled so that nobody in Minnesota would go through a weekend without having some propane to if they could get it to them. So, you know, the tough stories are, I think we're obviously continuing to do this. I said in Ways and Means this morning that we've been fighting, I think, every day to make sure that people get propane to their homes. There are people who have run out in North Dakota. We know of an instance where somebody froze to death. We also know in Minnesota that a senior citizen woman and her adult child checked into the Duluth Hospital because they ran out of heating fuel. And they called us. We immediately got them the funds to be able to be eligible to purchase fuel and get once they were back out of the hospital. And then just reported to me before the hearing that there was an incident in Wisconsin where people, family passed away because they didn't have. They were using charcoal, so they were using a bad source of heat, which goes to the warning. Warnings that we've issued to consumers, and we'll probably issue something again this week, saying when you're switching to alternative sources, you have to be very careful, and carbon monoxide is a danger, can kill you, and it's a dangerous thing. So, those are the parameters generally of the low-income heating assistance program. I do want to comment that we're not out of the woods, that over the next few months, because of the potential for cold weather, continued cold weather, it's going to be touch and go. But then we do have a long-term propane problem issue in Minnesota, and it's predominantly exacerbated by the fact that the Kinder Morgan company that owns the Cochin pipeline that brings Canadian propane to us has decided to not use that pipeline as of April, this spring, to deliver propane to Minnesota. It represents approximately 40% of the propane supply coming into Minnesota. So if you can imagine what we just went through and then have to deal with the fact that in April we're not going to have 40% of our state propane supply, it's an all hands on deck approach. The governor did call a meeting with the with propane industry and stakeholders in December, early December, and had this conversation about, you know, it was really right after the harvest, and try to mitigate Kinder Morgan's decision to shut down the pipeline for about a 2 or 3 week period in December. and the impact, and to try to avoid the impact on Minnesota residences. But then, again, in January, once this crisis hit, and the focus of all of these conversations has been about the immediate crisis, but at the same time, everybody is keeping an eye on and saying we also have to be concerned about the Cochin pipeline. I also testified in Senator Franken's Energy Subcommittee a couple weeks ago about the propane situation, brought it to that committee's attention. Senator Franken was here last week, and I say that because the whole problem about the supply of propane to Minnesota is a significant issue for the Midwest, and we all need to be thinking about ways to mitigate as we go forward. So, and I know that there's ideas out there, and I imagine there's a lot of questions for me too.
Questions from members. Representative Yarusso, I thought I saw your hand up earlier. No, okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here. A couple of quick questions. One, in Wisconsin, Governor Walker has increased their supplemental program to 80% of statewide median income, which obviously their median income is different than ours, but still the income eligibility guidelines are far higher than ours. Is the Department of Commerce considering going above the 60% guideline just because this is a crisis on a temporary basis? Is that under consideration?
Commissioner Rothman.
Madam Chair and Representative, under the federal guidelines, all states, including Wisconsin, are allowed to spend the federal dollars up to only 60% of the state median income. And as I indicated earlier, some states do have standing supplements to pay using state dollars to supplement their program. Minnesota has not had that program. So that's in essence why there's this need, because of the gap. So initially, when we were taking a look at the crisis demand, it was pretty self-evident and clear we had to move from 50% to 60%, which was under our discretion to do and allowable. It had been at 50% as standard, I don't know how long, but for quite, it might have been entire program. But in any event, in order to go above 60%, we would need a state appropriation for those funds.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Is the Department of Commerce considering advocating for that? This is something that I support, by the way, so I'm not trying to lead the witness here or something, but is that something that on a very temporary basis, one-time basis, is this something that the Department of Commerce is at least considering right now, or is it off the table?
Commissioner Rothman.
No, it's not off the table. Madam Chair and Representative, no, it's not off the table. I think we need $20 million to be able to get through this year. The demand goes down, but then I would encourage everyone, yes, to consider that, because we're going to be in the same spot next year, and we anticipate. I think it'd be fair to say that the federal government's fiscal situation will be relatively in the same situation. During the financial crisis, the federal government provided additional dollars to the states. But since then, over the last few years, it's come down. So we were at we got a $99 million allocation in December. We got an additional $15 million allocation, but weren't sure whether we were going to get that. We did, and that was distributed to all the states. So assuming that we would get something in that same neighborhood, and because we found ourselves in a situation where we are this year, I would say it would be wise for all of us to be thinking about an appropriation, a state appropriation to either maintain that 60% or go to 70% or even go to 80% as Wisconsin has.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And then one of the things with LIHEAP is that we're much better off if we're able to get people to fill up during the summer. The prices are lower. We can actually use that as a form of storage, so then the regional storage can be filled up and not used in the winter. Does the Department of Commerce have any ideas, or is there any thoughts about what we can be doing to sort of incentivize that? So even if it's something as small as LIHEAP customers are filling up in the summer, we could cover more people. It acts as a form of storage. Is there anything going on going on over there that can help us out with, make that happen?
Commissioner Rothman.
Madam Chair and Representative, here's the difficulty. Typically, the federal dollars are allocated in their budget cycle in December. And those funds are then used in December, and then if there's any additional allocations, they come in typically in January, maybe February. And those funds are spent. LIHEAP funds are then spent to be, you know, to apply to everybody through May 31st. And so there's really, I mean, there hasn't been traditionally. I do believe the notion should be explored to be able to fill up. So, for example, if you can use those LIHEAP dollars at the end of the program year, we would encourage people to do that because it is it was at $1.70. I don't know where it'll go. If it gets all the way down there, it's definitely better to fill up at that point. And then to the extent we had, so again, based on your last question, if we had the additional funding, we would explore that idea of doing it. It might, I do know based on, from our, you know, our staff that there are some administrative difficulties that we'd have to look at, but I would put it on the list of things we could take a look at.
Thank you, Representative Greffel.
Thank you. And I think that's, again, a one-time temporary increase in that cap from a state appropriation from 60 to 80%, I think is a good idea. And then, as you mentioned, if we could somehow incentivize that to have that take place in the spring and summer, we cover a lot more people, get a lot more bang for the buck. And the benefit to that is, of course, regionally at least, we're going to have lower prices because there's quite a bit of storage we're taking use of. Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Falk, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess part of that, Representative Garofalo mentioned, but it was an issue I was going to talk about as well, is because I know when Chair Hilty had this committee, I had brought up the idea too that potentially using some of the funds to buy when the prices were lower, it always seemed unpalatable because you were essentially withholding some of the LIHEAP dollars to make that initial investment. But maybe with the fact that we've opened up the state resources to put some money into the program, looking forward, putting some money in to go and buy, put money in and, you know, purchase fuel when the prices are low might actually make a lot of sense. And I know that there's been some talk about incentivizing additional types of storage, but, you know, we haven't even really talked about how much storage currently exists in the state and the fact that if we just better utilize what we have, we may not need some of those additional incentives. But I think that's something worth exploring, and maybe Commissioner Rothman can speak to that a little bit.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative, again, I'd be open to, and I think we should all think about, you know, the advantages that you can take or get if you purchase during the summer months because of the low prices. Administratively, there might be some issues with that in dealing with contracts and the things that you would have to do to purchase on and all that. But at the same time, I think it's definitely worth doing because of the situation that we're in. And to the extent state dollars, of course, you want to spend your money wisely. So I would, you know, to the extent you can, I would do that. On the capacity issue and being able to develop storage, this is a sort of an all hands on deck approach. So, for example, I'm just giving you rough numbers. It's reported that Minnesota that the pipeline out of Cogen will represent 40% of the propane supply. If you use that 40% and the data that we have from propane consumption, you know, it indicates a range of somewhere between, based on, you know, I think this data is going back a few years, using data going back a few years, somewhere between 80 and 218 million gallons of propane. And if you lose that from a pipeline, assuming like this year where we've gone to one of the highest levels in the last 5 to 10 years of usage, you're going to be at, you know, a couple hundred million gallons short, and you got to figure out a way to get that. That's the problem, and we need to figure out a way how to solve that problem.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just speaking out loud a little bit here, it's one of the things too, I know coming from a farm background that, you know, we use a lot of propane to dry corn, and we've got a fairly substantial ethanol industry, and I know that there, at least in my opinion, sometimes it seems a little bit idiosyncratic to go and dry corn down to say like 15% moisture just for the ethanol plant to then go and you know, run it and combine it with water in the process to make ethanol. And I don't know if there's ever been any talk of trying to work with some of our ethanol producers to maybe be willing to accept slightly wetter grades of corn, just because we know that we've got a shortage, because you end up using the propane both in the drying down the product, but then also it's, you know, oftentimes used in the heating process at the ethanol plant. And so maybe there's a way just to go and get us all to be working a little bit more in sync and hopefully having a better result for everybody.
Did you have anything to add on that topic, Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative, when we've had these meetings with stakeholders, it's included the farmers and corn growers and everybody. So they've been brought into the conversation. So when you start talking to them and thinking that there's some ideas, some suggestions, and how to dry, when to dry, using different fuel sources for the drying, doing different techniques, there's a variety of things that have been talked about. But I just go back to, let's put them all on the table and do an all hands on deck. I mean, we can reduce consumption, that'll help, and avoid it.
I have a couple of quick questions before we turn it over to weatherization. I'm wondering, do you typically run out of the LIHEAP allocation from the federal government, or is there usually some amount that's carried over into the next year? Or what is the typical track record for LIHEAP funding?
Madam Chair, we've typically done very well to be able to wisely use the resources that we have. There's some discretion in our program to be able to adjust the standard benefit amount. So based on the projected demand, based on the dollars we receive and expect, then we do the staff does a very careful calculation and scenario and project how best to where to set those levels. So we try to get through. Now, of course, in May, something could totally send you crazy. I do want one other comment about that, and I think worth looking into, and we can provide the data, is that over time, the assistance has been stretched even further and further, so that the average benefit level on the standard benefit side, is about $500. It's been higher in the past, because it's been higher in the past, and we've had to, spend less for that benefit. Low-income folks, with the price of inflation and the cost of fuel, are pinched even further than they have been in the past. So, again, going back to the prior question in terms of would it be good to have state assistance, it would be for that reason, because then we could increase the average benefit to everybody.
I have a question about the complaint process. I know when I first became the energy chair, looked into what do people do when they have a complaint about their electricity provider or their natural gas provider, and there's a pretty clear mechanism in place for people to work through complaints with the Public Utilities Commission and your office. What if a consumer believes that they're being price gouged or in some way the subject of unfair market practices, is there a clear-cut complaint procedure that they use, and is that through your office, through the PUC, or through the Attorney General's office?
Well, Madam Chair, the way it's worked in the past, and then let me address the emergency situation, is that you're right. There is a complaint process through PUC, and the department has a energy assistance line. So they can call the Department of Commerce, and then we facilitate those complaints and get those to the utilities and to help facilitate get a resolution to those. I do know that the Attorney General's office has looked into price issues in the past. I know of a specific incident, specific complaint and investigation that was undertaken in 2009 in the propane area. And then let me speak to the and Madam Chair, what we're talking about here is some of the authority, limited authority we might have in this area. When the crisis hit and the prices spiked so high, the governor under the emergency order instructed me to keep a very close eye on the pricing. in essence, in under an emergency situation to make sure that prices were just not going astronomically and outrageously too high. At the same time, there is a provision in the LIHEAP statute that prohibits discrimination. If you're a supplier, discrimination to the you know, the beneficiaries of the program. And so we have some authority there, but it, we'd be happy to talk with you a little bit further about that. And then as well, while some states have price regulations, Minnesota doesn't have a specific propane, for example, or regulation on, in terms of this commodity. There is the Standard Consumer Protection Deceptive Trade Practices Act statute. And then what I did, and I indicated that, was I sent the letter to the energy, to the Propane Association, asking for them to keep an eye on that. So through those, we've pretty much cobbled together the ability to, we do have, we're looking at the pricing and fluctuations in the pricing and why they went so high and the gyrations in the market. So it's a pending.
I think it's important for me to add, I understand many of the suppliers in the industry have been doing just a phenomenal job of making sure that people who need it get help and people who can't get help still get taken care of. And so I don't mean to imply that I think that the industry is taking advantage of the situation. Whenever there's a crisis like this, though, we always want to keep our eyes wide open for the few bad actors that might take advantage of people under the circumstances. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with the committee. We're going to continue this conversation over session because we have very tight deadlines. Folks who have proposals they want us to talk about in the area of propane specifically and energy assistance and weatherization, if you can get your bills in the hopper absolutely as soon as possible. So we have the time to give them full consideration here in the committee. That'd be great. And Commissioner, any proposals you want us to take a look at, we're happy to hear them.
Great.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Next, we're going to talk about weatherization, and we have Patrick McFarland from Anoka County Community Action Program. He's up from my neck of the woods. And looks like he's joined by Karen Moe. I just want to preface this by saying when I became the energy chair and I started studying what we do in the area of energy in the state of Minnesota, I was very surprised that we don't have a state appropriation for either energy assistance or weatherization. That that money comes from the federal government and from our utilities. And I think, Representative Garofalo, we should take a close look at what Wisconsin does in this area and see whether that's a model we want to follow, if their program's big, if it's little, you know, if there's ways that it works well, ways it doesn't work well. So with that, please go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Moe. I work for Minnesota Community Action Partnership, which is the state association of community action agencies. We have 26 members that provide services throughout the entire state of Minnesota. We're also the primary service delivery vehicle for both the Energy Assistance Program and the Weatherization Assistance Program. So first, I just want to say thank you very much to you all for passing the bill that you passed today off the floor and for doing it so quickly. We greatly appreciate that. We also want to say thank you very much to Department of Commerce, Governor Dayton, and the congressional delegation for acting so quickly and swiftly to the current situation that many Minnesotans are facing. Regarding weatherization, I'm just going to quickly say thank you very much for the support that you provided last year to the Weatherization Assistance Program. The funding that you provided was a critical part of a pool of funding that provided the basic requirement to maintain the infrastructure of the program statewide and stabilize the program. And last year when we testified, we explained that the program funding had been very chaotic over the last few years, and so the portion of funding that you provided actually helped stabilize the program for our state. And especially during this past winter with the high heating costs and the cold winter, we know that the energy efficiency measures implemented through the weatherization program have had a very meaningful impact on households throughout all of Minnesota. Those are energy efficiency measures that permanently reduce the energy burden for households throughout all of Minnesota. The one last note I want to make is, with all of the news we're hearing about how folks are turning to alternative heating resources during this difficult winter, one thing that has come up is the concern over health and safety measures, and I just want to highlight that through the Weatherization Assistance Program, our folks are in the house. They're not just making homes more energy efficient. They're also leaving those homes healthier and safer for the folks that they're serving. With that, I just want to turn it over to one of our service providers throughout the state.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Patrick McFarland. I'm the Executive Director of the Oak County Community Action Program. I've been there since 1973. Community Action are serving the entire state of Minnesota. They're private nonprofits, and we have a trade organization, Minnesota Community Action Partnership, that Karen works for, and they do our association business. I also wanted to thank the committee for its strong bipartisan support of our programs, our energy programs that the CAP agencies deliver, and say that we really appreciate the support that you've given us over the years. When I left Blaine a couple hours ago, I was intending on asking you for $20 million of energy assistance money, and it was nice that you came through even before I appeared at the podium here. So I'm going to tell my colleagues that I'm a heck of a lobbyist. Energy assistance, the commissioner talked about all hands on deck. We're working every employee at ACAP who can take energy assistance applications is working. We're working 6 days a week. We do not have a lot of propane. Our propane heat is up in Representative Hackbart's district primarily. We have only about 80 folks that are on propane heat in Oak County. But increasing the assistance levels are going to make a tremendous difference in the suburbs, I think. We have a lot of people that are in that income level. And we're seeing that already we were down about 400 families, primarily because the economy has improved. And that, with the increase of the eligibility, we're picking up all those families. We've also determined so far that about 500 families in Anoka County were over income. And those people are coming back, and hopefully we'll be able to serve a good percentage of those. Madam Chair, you wanted to know how much of the $2 million that ACAP received for the supplemental weatherization. We received about 2.6% of that, or $52,000. And that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but this program has been under such stress that it's really been very helpful for us. We can do an additional 15 households with that, although the statewide energy assistance weatherization averages are about $7,000. They're somewhat less in our county because of our housing stock. But the nice part of the state money is we've been able to supplement and provide our families with things that the DOE money does not allow. The DOE program on a federal level has really taken it on the chin over the last few years, as you're aware. And right now, my utility-funded programs in the weatherization are four times the size of my DOE-funded. Now, we have some additional weatherization funding, but it would be really good to be able to keep that infrastructure for weatherization together. That would, you know, cost, I think, around $11 million total funding. And we have a good structure in place. We've long waiting lists for client services, and we think that would be very valuable for us. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to wrap it up.
Questions for members? Mr. McFarland, do you have folks who have come in and applied for assistance that this year haven't been able to get it because the fund has been tapped more because of the propane crisis? And is the aid that you administer through the Emergency Assistance Program allocated on a geographic formula, or is it all run through Commerce, and so it's just first come, first serve?
It's run through Commerce, Madam Chair, members. It's run through Commerce. It's first come, first serve. We were projecting to be out of money first part of March, or March, like second week in March, actually. With the $20 million, we should be able to go to the end of the fuel season. We have not turned anybody away. You know, the way the program works is you just keep taking the applications and processing the applications, and if the money runs out, the money runs out, and that's done. That's one of the reasons we have our people working 6 days a week, is to make sure we get all of the money that we possibly can for our Anoka County constituents.
So how does that actually work? Then you act as a liaison between the person who's applying for emergency assistance or energy assistance and the Department of Commerce?
Correct, Madam Chair and members. There's a computer software program called eHeat, and that we log into eHeat and we complete the application on behalf of the client. We then verify the income, make sure everything, the application is correct, and once we do that and have all the appropriate documentation, then we certify that that client is eligible and that payment is processed through the Department of Commerce and goes directly to the utility.
Did I see a hand go? With regard to the weatherization piece, you said that the ACAP allocation was $50,000. Did you get that yet, and have you been able to use it on anything? And if so, what have you used it on?
Madam Chair, members, we've received our $52,000, and we've spent about half of it. And as I said, we've been using it to supplement weatherization activities and to do some things that the DOE programs don't allow. For example, buying Energy Star appliances if a family does not have appliances, or their appliances are old, bad. So we've done things like that, but just basically supplementing the weatherization program. And that's essentially what we also do with our utility funded programs. So they're also providing things like we have a program with Conexus Energy for the northern part of the county, and that provides Energy Star appliances and in some cases some central air for medically necessitated cooling.
Any other questions from members? Well, we're going to talk about this a lot more next week. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. I want to welcome our new page, M. Anton. I hope I'm saying that right. Welcome to the committee. We're glad to have you. And members, I don't think we have any more business before the committee. Oh, Representative Morgan probably hasn't had a chance to read the minutes, so why don't we do those next week? You're off the hook, Representative Morgan, but bring them home. With that, we're adjourned.